what's best for them. We know what's best for society. And even when we're right, there's something about that way of living and behaving which corrupts us, which makes us more and more callous about other people and their views. And you got to be very careful about that.
And in that connection, I'm asking you, why do you come in with 10 people? 10 people next to a man who has a little house. I think you did lousy planning to begin with. You have too many people in the house, and you put the house in the wrong place. So you deserve opposition. I'm sorry I have to teach two more classes today. Bert will carry on successfully, but I have to be...
Am I going to see you later? No.
You'll see me next
Monday. What am I doing sitting here alone with all of this?
Waiting for lunch.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry I have to...
Isn't the fact that you have 10 people in a house an economic thing? You have to have these to SSI to pay the bills? Isn't that why you...
The question was, isn't the fact that you have 10 people in a house an economic thing? Of course. Now, there are a couple points that could be made. First, even with one or two in a house, it's still going to be a lot less expensive than the institutional costs. Today, institutional costs are out of sight. In New York State, they're $30,000, $25,000 a resident per year. So the economic disadvantage of smaller places, very small places, have been oversold. But there's another factor. Most of you, as I understand it, are involved in small group homes. A lot of you are. That really is a compromise, too. There's an even better way, and that's to find support systems so people can stay with their families. There are so many ways of helping families stay together. I saw a mother a few months ago who works. There's single parents. Has a very marginal income. She has three children. One of them is a quite severely retarded child. And what she wanted was a day program for her child. And there wasn't one available for her child. It was a very delicate child with a lot of multiple problems, transportation needs, all kinds of other things. Now, the state quickly volunteered to place the child at the Syracuse Developmental Center. The capital expenditure is $22,000 a year. This mother said, I don't want the child at the developmental center. If the child could go to a day program for a few hours, and if one or two nights a week we could get somebody to come in and sit with the kid so I could run out shopping, because I can't leave this child alone and I really can't afford to pay for the babysitters, and my children are too young to sit for themselves. So she was asking for something in the order of $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000, and the state said, no, we can't give you that, we give you $22,000. As part of this study I was telling you I was doing, I went to an institution in Pennsylvania. This institution has 120 children. It's a new institution outside of Philadelphia, Woodhaven. And at the time I visited, they had about 120 youngsters, and the budget for those 120 youngsters was $8.1 million, $60,000 a resident, which astonished me. And a lot of these kids were mildly retarded kids from the ghettos of Philadelphia. And so I toured the institution, and I took some pictures, and I did some other things, and I gave some address to a whole mob of people that came from somewhere. And after they left, I met with the administrators. Some of them, you know, friends of ours. So they're always friends that I fight with. So I said, you know, I have an idea. I said, it's costing $60,000 a resident. Why don't you get the state to give the families $15,000? That's a quarter. The state will say $45,000 a resident. And you hire some auditors, a couple of auditors, and they'll visit the family every couple of months, and they'll have to show how they spent the $15,000. And they could do what they want. They could, under certain guidelines, they could have an education for the child, send them to a private school. They could buy good food for the kid, and if there's some left over, the rest of the kids could eat good food too. That's all right. Good medical attention. You could do that all for $15,000. Well, you would have thought that I was proposing that the government change and we all become a communist nation. That there's something un-American about supporting people to live at home. It seems there's nothing un-American about spending enormous sums of money for the state to run homes, but there seems to be something un-American about supporting families to stay together. We've got the same problem with the elderly. All over America, we're building institutions for old people, and it is sure as anything. Sure as anything. Most of the people in this room, if you live long enough, are going to wind up in institutions for the old. That's why I'm so surprised that nobody seems to be too concerned about this. It's not like mental retardation where, thank God, you've escaped it, you see. You're not retarded, so you won't have to go to Fernald. And I could see you could feel somewhat objective and cool about mental retardation. You could be professional. But insofar as this new industry, geriatrics, it's a whole new disease now. See? The old days we had grandmothers and grandfathers, now we have a geriatric problem. You're going to be one of the problems. And you're going to wind up in an institution, and you don't seem to be, people don't seem to be too concerned about that. And we could do something different about the old. We could keep families together. It's a lot easier than people think.
One of the thoughts, to kind of go back to your question, is that it's like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. It's like, if you're going towards unitization, it means that you really have to build your planning around people, one at a time, so if your comment is small as best. And we almost have locked in services as group home, being best the community services. And there's a whole range. There's going to be a plan, a continuum, a very comprehensive continuum of backup support services that allow that person to stay in the home and to get people back into a home from institutions that give that person the means to stay there. So you can move back to houses of one to two, not eight, and so forth. But it means that you've got to have it laid out, and you've got to work with the community as a partner. It's not that you've ducked the community, but you really go in and you can tell them, here's your program, here are the kinds of opportunities. Then you can begin to free up your dollars. You can create a flexible budget to purchase the services the way you want it. You now know where you're going.
Bill, no doubt, the compelling danger with the new move, with the new advances, is that the small programs become as insidiously bureaucratic and expensive and unfeeling as eventually as the institutions. Somewhere around the turn of the century, people got the idea that all problems are going to be solved by science and by professionalism. That things that had been dealt with naturally for generations, for hundreds and thousands of years, were now going to be dealt with better because of the science and the technology that we've created and our professionalism. Now, I have yet to see any evidence at all that persuades me that an individual is, for the most part, any better off out of the home than in the home. Now, the problem with helping people remain in the home is in providing those additional supports to certain families so that people could stay home, whether it's babysitters or day programs or other support systems. But you see, it seems that we've built this enormous helping service industry. It's the biggest growth industry in America. There are millions of people now in this human services business. Millions. Now, some I'm sure are needed, but I don't think we need all of those we have. And I think that if we turned a lot of these problems to the primary unit, the families, and gave them the support systems, they'd figure out ways of dealing with problems. You know, for thousands of years, old people stayed with their children. I know it's a more complicated society today, but there are more resources today. Old people can stay at home if maybe somebody could come in twice a day and lift grandpa up and down and get him in a chair and what, because this woman can't lift up that big old man. But we don't think of those very simple ways of dealing with these problems. We look to the state, government, and professionals and technology. And unfortunately, the professionals themselves feed into that and advocate this way of dealing with really very simple problems, could be simple problems. It's very distressing. It's very distressing.
Fred, one of the things that I'm surprised was not mentioned when the gentleman said that we needed 100 group homes is the funding mechanism in the state. Probably was when you were here, but I can tell you, I don't see that many cases because the funding is not there. And
never was.
If there ever has to be a need for reaching the goals of more homes, we've got to provide the services. And part of it will be what Jane referred to is a need for some equitable way as we bring the standards up in the institutions, it still has to be done, some equitable way for the funds to follow. But we're not going to reach our goals in the years ahead. Because in a concerted effort rather than a them and us philosophy between the institution and the community, there's been some very good things happening in Region 1, but we need to do some of those in our region, Region 5. And unless that happens, I don't see how we're going to reach our goals. Particularly, I came to hear again from some of the people about, you know, what we can do to help, because I just signed an affidavit stating, so did Bill, or you better sign it today, because today is the last day, an affidavit stating that I have 352 people that can go back today, okay, and another 150 that can leave in another year or two, you know, that could go back, but 352 that could go today, but there isn't any place for them to go.
Yeah. Well, In some fundamental ways, this problem is just like the integration of black school children into the public schools was 20 years ago. In 1954, after that Brown decision, and when black children started going to southern white schools or northern white schools, those children suffered grievously. Some of them were killed. They were maimed. Bombs exploded on school buses. And those parents knew it. Those parents knew that they were intentionally submitting their own children to grave dangers. And there's no doubt about it. And this sounds callous. And I don't want it to sound callous, but I think it will sound callous. There are going to be some people who are leaving the institutions under these plans. You know, the governor says to send 400 back. What does he know? But anyway, you send 400 back. There are some people who will be worse off by going back. There are some people who have made lives for themselves in Fernald, Grantham, or what. And not only are they satisfied with those lives, but they're not such bad lives. They've learned to accommodate. They've got kind people near them. They're eating well. They've got associations. And it's not the best life by any means. That's what this whole movement is all about. But some of them are going to community placements that are very, very bad, in contrast to the institution. There's not much doubt about that. And yet, if we don't take those risks, and that's why this sounds callous, because I'm not taking the risk, you see, I'm saying those others have to take the risk. There's not going to be that movement back. Gunner is right. You probably need some new money to start those community homes. But also, there are going to be an awful lot of risks taken, and we're going to be terribly hurt, embarrassed, and chagrined because there are going to be any number of people who are not going to get a better deal during this transition decade or so of moving out of the institution. But we really have to do it. And it's not just for the mentally retarded. It really is for all of us. I was reading an article in one of the journals, you know, the daily articles on the geriatric problem today. That's a big, big new industry. And this fellow extrapolated the cost of geriatric care into the year 2000 and how many people will be needing such care. And he concluded that the industry will spend in the year 2000 $186 billion. Today's dollar value. It's a lot of money. So I thought about that, and I said, you know, if he's right, two things are going to happen between now and the year 2000. One of two things. Either we're going to develop euthanasia programs, which have already started, but we're really going to go into this business seriously because the governments, the states, just not going to spend $186 billion on old people. Or we're going to have to change our ways. We're going to have to change our ways and how we think about human beings and what we think about what human beings deserve and are entitled to. But if we don't change our ways, it's as certain as anything I could think of that we're going to have euthanasia programs for old people. I mean, we're going to have euthanasia programs for the retarded, the severely retarded, which California now has. And I know what's going on a little bit in Florida, your old state. That's why it's very important to get those people out. It's not just mental retardation we're talking about. The whole culture had begun a movement toward institutionalizing ourselves. We also had begun a euthanasia movement that started about the 1920s and was building up a great deal of steam. And in my mind, there's only one important thing that stopped it. And you know what it was?
World War II.
World War II and Hitler. And Stalin, the repugnance of the concentration camps so affronted everybody, even the indecent, not only the decent, that the euthanasia movement just stopped dead. But we were surely going to an euthanasia, and now we started again. Death with dignity. Okay? Nobody puts bills in the legislature. Life with dignity. Got death with dignity. That's what we got. And you see, the insidiousness of all of that is I think ought to be noted. Look, I'm just categorically against anything having to do with euthanasia. I'm even categorically against abortion. But I don't want to get into a fight with you about it. The thing about those laws, the California law, the death with dignity law, that so offends me is not that there isn't an instance where somebody who is terribly old and tremendous pain and right at the end and, you know, says, please let me out of this misery. You know, I couldn't pull plugs or what, but you know, I don't think people who pull the plugs in a case like that, in a very rare case, are monsters. But what offends me is we've taken the exception and made it the rule. We passed a law saying you could do this. These kinds of decisions ought to be the rarest of exceptions. So rare that there isn't even a law about them. There's some ambiguous way of dealing with these problems, and you know, the one who pulls the plug is taking a pretty big risk because he's not even within the law, because they should be so rare if they're done at all. But rather than keep it that way, the way we've had it, which was bad enough, we now take this very rare exception and we make it the law. Right now, it's a pretty restrictive law. Who knows? Some zealous legislators will make it an omnibus law, and then they'll call it the Sunshine Law. Florida calls it the Sunshine Law. There's nothing sunshine about euthanasia.
I'd like to make the next prediction that lunch be served.
Good. Thank you all very much
for coming. We're just going to bring...